You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Dog Pound, be at First Energy Stadium in 2015 for the action and excitement of every game. Secure your Cleveland Browns 2015 season tickets by placing your deposit today. Visit ClevelandBrowns.com or call 440-824-3434 for more information. Nathan Segura joined in the Dog Bowl by our guy Andrew Gribble. That's at Andrew_Gribble, a.k.a. the Gribs, here on CBD. Gribs, combine your thoughts in Indianapolis. Just before we get into the meat and potatoes of what you've been writing for us at ClevelandBrowns.com, but just overall, what did you think of, you know, what you saw out there?
Well, you know, I think it's an interesting draft class because you've got kind of the headline names in Winston and Mariota, but really outside of that, even some of these guys like Amari Cooper, you know, they're not like headline names, I would say, but I think this draft is maybe deeper than people are giving it credit for, just because there's maybe that lack of star power up top. You're probably not going to have a star player, a well-known player like a Manziel last year go beyond those top 10 picks. But you know, you can find a lot of talent. And I think what we saw yesterday, I think in particular, was that this draft is absolutely loaded with defensive linemen, linebacker, pass rusher types. And that's really the strength of this draft class. And I think that's good news for the Browns, because I think there's value there beyond the first round in getting players on this team. If that's the direction the Browns want to go in the second or third round, you can get guys there who can kind of have that immediate impact, and maybe getting like a late first round value in a normal year in the second or third round.
And I think that you're looking at a draft that's also deep at receiver again. And mm-hmm. I think the Browns have an opportunity in this draft to maybe add a couple guys on the D-line and a couple of receivers. It seems like where this draft truly is deep is where the Browns need it, other than quarterback.
No, yeah, I agree. And I think that because you saw Kevin White and Amari Cooper, I think it's pretty clear at this point those are the one and two guys. But, you know, after what we saw this weekend, unless the Browns trade up, probably not getting Kevin White. I mean, I think he did the one thing that people worried about, which was kind of his straight line deep ball speed, and he ran a 4.35, was faster than Amari Cooper, which that was kind of surprising. But it's not as if Amari Cooper ran a bad 40, you know. And I think
4.4.
Cooper did, I think, the best in one of the quickness drills that showed that's what we knew about him. He's a great route runner, always finds a way to get open. But there's value there as well. You look at Devontae Parker. I think that's a name that I think we're going to keep hearing, because he's projected right in the Browns' range, and the need for the wide receiver. I think that's, we're going to keep hearing that over and over again. But even beyond that, I think there's a guy like a Jalen Strong,
who
could be available in the second round. It could be a late first round, could be an early second round. Even some of the hometown guy, Devin Smith, that's another deep threat that could be there in the second round for the Browns as well. So kind of like last year, it might not behoove a team to trade up like Buffalo did and go all in on a wide receiver when there's just so much more value and similarly good players, if not better, beyond that number one guy.
All right, we're going to go to the phone lines before we get into some more of your combine thoughts, the biggest risers, biggest fallers, the biggest winners and losers, and get into your experience in Indianapolis. Go to Rodney on his cell phone. Rodney, welcome to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford.
Welcome, gentlemen. It's almost 75 degrees out here in Cleveland.
It feels like it anyway.
Anyways, one of your previous hosts last week brought up a really good point. So a Sam Bradford, what, number one pick, an overall pick?
Yep.
Their value always goes down when a team has to get rid of them. Has there been any number one quarterbacks in the last 8 or 10 years that didn't work out, and when they got traded, what value did they have? I'm guessing second rounders. I mean, and again, we're not talking number one overall. I know it's a little bit more value, but in the situation, maybe a little different than a guy that's not panning out. But again, this guy's got issues. If he has to leave that team and come to the Browns, could we get him for a second round or not? That's my question. Thanks.
That's an interesting one. Jeff George, I know, was in the blockbuster trade in 90. They traded, what, Risen and Hinton to get to the Falcons to be able to draft him. And then George ended up actually with the Falcons later on.
What did the Giants trade for Eli back in that draft?
But that happened like at the draft, right?
Yeah, that was on that
after
day.
The fact. I don't know if that's happened. Has that happened in terms of?
Not that I know of, but I would go on to say that whatever you think Bradford might be worth in a normal year, maybe bump that up a round or two because of the market this year. I think that there's a lot of teams that would be willing to maybe overpay in a trade for a guy like Bradford, because he's proven when healthy he can be kind of, I'm not going to say an elite quarterback or even above average, but he can get you by and kind of be in that mid-tier level of quarterbacks, and there's always the potential that made him that number one pick. So, you know, maybe if this was a good year for quarterbacks on the market, he'd be worth maybe a third or fourth rounder, but now you bump that up to a second rounder, I would think.
So Atlanta traded to the Falcons to get Jeff George back at, because he was a number one overall pick in 1996. They traded what became two first-round picks based on his play. One was Trev Alberts, and the other was Marvin Harrison. So, interesting. That was for Jeff George, who was a number one pick. But that's just not what it's going to be at this point. You're not getting two firsts for him. But I think it could be, you know, Bleacher Report is reporting that the Browns trade a second, and they would get back a fifth and Sam Bradford. I don't know if that's going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, the second-round pick, is especially in a draft this deep, that is incredibly valuable. And so that you got to be real confident before you're willing to part with that. But again, you know, the quarterback market, what it is, you know, we've seen the attention that a guy like Josh McCown has gotten over the last week. It just shows that if Bradford does pop up on the market, I think there's going to be a lot of teams really kind of calculating what they can package to get him.
And they will. A guy who's got it all, former number one overall pick. A report coming out from Pro Football Talk, Charles Clay's market could be about $6 million a season. The Dolphins want to retain him around $5 million. They don't know if that's possible. The Bills, according to our own Vic Carucci of the Buffalo News, saying that the Bills had their eye on him as well. So Charles Clay could be a guy commanding a lot of money out there on the open side. Now, if the Browns don't bring back a guy like Jordan Cameron, tight end-wise, Max Williams didn't run that well in terms of speed, but looked very good catching the football and was very smooth catching it, was good in the short area stuff. Anybody in the draft at tight end other than Williams you saw as maybe a possibility for the Browns?
Well, as multiple analysts said, that this is not the best draft to get a tight end, and I think you have Max Williams has kind of solidified his spot at that number one tight end spot, but you don't even know if he's going to go in the first round. But after him, I think it's a clear number two, probably with Clive Walford at Miami, a real athletic guy who I talked to him at the Senior Bowl, and he really didn't even start playing football or even thinking about playing football until I think his junior or senior year of high school. Has a basketball background, but you know he really caught on to it pretty quickly. And what I saw at the Senior Bowl, he was running around linebackers with no issue. I think that's not the part of the game you're worried about. You're worried about maybe the blocking and other things that go into it. But he's kind of projected in that second to third round range. And based on the lack of maybe solid tight ends in this draft, you could probably see him going in the second round. So I wouldn't think it'd be a stretch to see him go in the Browns' range there in the second round. But I could also see him kind of dropping past the Browns at that point.
Who stood out to you? Who do you think were some of the risers and fallers? And what was just kind of your overall impressions of the combine? I thought it was so weird, actually, when you're actually in there, you know, in this giant stadium with really nobody in it and people kind of just running around and doing their drills.
Yeah, you know, when we were filming that segment a couple days into the combine and the kickers were working out, it didn't even feel like a real event. It almost seemed like they were just messing around and practicing. We're really, you know, we were sitting there just talking about the Browns and, you know, they're making the most important kicks of their life. And I almost wonder if that's weird for kickers, like kicking in an empty stadium like that and having all that pressure put on top of you. But yeah, I think that's the vibe of it. The real action is always in the interview room, out in the hallways there when you have a bunch of coaches, GMs coming through in general. And then, you know, you really only had maybe one or two huge press conferences this year. Jameis Winston's was clearly the biggest, and I think Marcus Mariota's was a close second. But even a guy like, I'll go back to this, Amari Cooper was talking at one podium, and there was like two other guys talking. You wouldn't know that this guy was a potential top five pick. You know, maybe it was the timing, but you know, just it kind of reaffirmed the lack of true star power in this draft. But again, very good players all around. In terms of bettering their draft stock, I think too. We already mentioned Kevin White, what he did. I think he's now, you know, now there's some legitimacy in the fact that he could potentially be the number one wide receiver in this draft. And then secondly, I think Dante Fowler Jr. from Florida. I think that he's been a lot of momentum building for him over the last couple months, whether you want to buy into that or not. I don't know how momentum works in this part of the process, but he ran so well for his size, did it with a gold watch on his wrist. And
yes, he did.
So, you know, there's a lot. Basically, you look at the teams in the top 10, and you could maybe pick out eight or nine that could use a pass rusher like Dante Fowler. And so I think that he maybe is kind of reached that level where you think about him maybe ahead of a Randy Gregory, who weighed in really light at the combine, and that might be a concern for some teams, and maybe in that Shane Ray range. So, he was a guy that maybe a couple months ago we were talking of as like a mid to late first rounder. Now he's being talked up as, I remember Dane Brugler mentioned him as one of his favorite players in the entire combine. He's could potentially be a top 10, top five guy.
We've also heard there's a lot of depth kind of at the offensive line on the interior of the line. They think you can get good value of guards later on in this draft. If the Browns wanted to add another interior lineman, they could do that. Defensive line, that's where the Browns are looking. Some of these guys, just absolute freaks, put on a pretty good show at the combine.
Yeah. I had the most fun watching Danny Shelton, though. I mean, he was like 340 pounds. I don't think he really cared what he ran in the 40-yard dash, but it was a majestic 5.64 seconds, which, you know, I think if I tried that, I'd probably run it at about 5.66 seconds or something like that.
So you could beat Rich Eisen, who ran 6.1.
I don't know. Probably not. I probably couldn't. Now that I think about it, Shelton could probably beat me in the 40. But, you know, he just moves so well, though, for his size. It's not straight line speed isn't what his forte is. And that's another player who is constantly linked to the Browns. But you hear so much good things about him, you start to wonder whether he's going to be around at that number 12 pick.
And I think doesn't seem like it anymore.
Yeah, there's so many. Like, you look at this team like Chicago with John Fox. You know, you think they need some stuff on offense, but, you know, he's going to see a guy like Shelton and jump on him right away, you'd think. But there's other good defensive tackles available in that first round. Malcolm Brown, Eddie Goldman, Jordan Phillips. Those are all guys that could potentially go in the first round. I mean, this is we could be seeing something around the lines of like 10 or 12 D-ends, D-linemen / hybrid linebackers go in the first round. I think that's going to be kind of what this draft is known for. And, you know, flipping to the offensive side really quick, there's not really that true elite offensive tackle like we saw the year that of the Jake Fisher draft or whatever. There was like four of those guys, and really there might not be any, but there's all these guys you could pencil in as like, wow, that guy would be a really good right tackle, or even if we shift him a guard, he could be an elite guard. And I think there's a lot of that in this year's draft, and the guy that from out of nowhere, Ali Marpet, kind of vaulted up draft boards with his sub 5 40-yard dash, which is very similar to what Joel Bitonio did last year.
And you had, you know, Lyle Collins coming up, and you talked about Joel Bitonio. They talked about Collins reminding the athleticism of Bitonio. Brandon Scherff, who was not able to finish the combine, you know, talking about another tackle who could come in and be like a Zach Martin, a Pro Bowl guard right away. And a lot of coaches, is interesting. Jason Garrett was talking about it, how in some of the new NFL, because you're dealing with so many good interior pass rushers, that guards are becoming even more and more important in pass protection as well as the run game.
Yeah, you know, and a couple years ago, I think that trend really started. The guy's name is escaping me. The Arizona Cardinals used their, I think, the number 8 pick in the draft on that guard.
Jonathan Cooper from
North Carolina. Jonathan Cooper, and then two picks later, Chance Warmack goes to the Tennessee Titans. You had two guards in the first round, whereas in previous years, you might not even have any guards go in the first round.
Right.
So I think it really has shifted in that direction. If you're looking for a guard-specific guy, Laken Tomlinson of Duke is kind of the top-of-the-line guy, and as far as character goes, probably one of the best in the entire draft. Is talked about going to med school and everything like that. You listen to him talk and you're taken aback. I mean, the guy is really, really smart. And so he's maybe in that second or third round range. But it was interesting hearing, you know, because a lot of these draft analysts keep linking right tackles to the Browns in the first round. But that's maybe the one position where you ask Pettine or Farmer, they came out and maybe talked about, you know, they like Mitchell Schwartz, and they brought up Michael Bowie again. So this Ray and Pettine don't really tip their hand very much, but that was maybe the closest thing we got to kind of reminding us, be like, you know, hey, we're okay on the offensive line. I mean, I think there could be other areas, but then again, if you have your draft board and you see a guy come up and he's your number one guy, you got to grab him, even if you do have starters in that position.
So Todd McShay was talking about the quarterback, saying after Mariota and Winston, not a whole lot there. Did anybody kind of stand out to you as somebody that the Browns could look at in the middle rounds?
Yeah, you know, it all depends. Hundley is just so hard to read. You know, you don't know where he's going to go. I think that the Mariota and Winston are clearly going to go in the first round. Probably.
And I was impressed with Winston.
Probably be gone before the top 10. I think Mariota did as much as he could do. Everyone knew he was going to run the fastest 40. Athleticism was really never a concern with him. And I think really with Mariota, it's only going to be a matter of time. You can't really – The things people are worried about with Mariota, you're not going to know until you get him on the field and in your offensive scheme. But, you know, it's just tough to read. Garrett Grayson, the Colorado State quarterback, he's a pro-style quarterback. He didn't throw at the combine. He's dealing with some kind of injury. That's a guy to watch maybe over the next couple months. I sort of liked the guy from Nevada, Cody Fajardo. You know,
we got a
Kaepernick's backup. You know, he looked okay, and I think – he certainly didn't hurt his draft stock at that event, but, you know, he's a day three guy. I think most of those guys that we saw on TV on Saturday are day three guys.
Or not getting drafted at all.
And so when you draft a quarterback on day three, there's really minimal expectations that come with those guys, and they have to get it with your team, learn the system, and then once you see them in training camp, then you can start setting expectations. But, you know, just as a comparison, I was looking back at day three quarterbacks from last year. Just, you know, real minimal impact in the first year because they're getting drafted by teams with quarterbacks. So it's just really hard to read at this point with some of those guys.
Yeah, and the guys who were going day three last year, like Logan Thomas, you had Aaron Murray.
Aaron Murray and A.J. McCarron.
Yeah.
You wonder if this year, if somehow A.J. McCarron had, like, his – ninth year of eligibility, it seems like, at
Alabama,
they would probably be way up there.
Yeah,
you know, McCarron and Murray were polished quarterbacks. They just
loved Aaron
Murray. They picked a bad year to be seniors.
They certainly did, and now they are with Cincinnati and Kansas City, respectively. Right now at ClevelandBrowns.com, Andrew Gribble's been putting out a lot of stuff. Kevin Jones as well, building off the interviews that I did with Ray Farmer and Mike Pettine. Also, great combine coverage. It's all there at ClevelandBrowns.com, or download the Browns mobile app and have it delivered right to the palm of your hand at your leisure. Follow him on Twitter at Andrew_Gribble, G-R-I-B-B-L-E. Andrew, what was the highlight of your combine experience?
Well, you know, I don't want to say it like peaked early with St. Omo's early in the trip. But
all right, so let me ask, okay, good. Okay, go, keep going. No, we'll talk about it for a second.
It's just a great place to go. And, you know, the thing I sell to people about St. Omo's is that it is like the most affordable, nice steakhouse I've ever been, because the meal is like, the steaks are always expensive everywhere you go, but you actually like get the sides with the steaks, whereas opposed to other places, you got to fork over the family size servings of, you know, to go with it. And, you know, they have something that no one else has, and that's the shrimp cocktail that lights your face on fire. So
what did you think of the shrimp cocktail sauce? So you guys had talked about it. I ate it. I didn't bump anything off. I ate them all. I was saying earlier, I think it's like one day maybe they made it a little spicier than they should have, and somebody was like, oh, this is good. And to me, it's almost a caricature of itself at this point.
See, yeah, I think that I agree with that, because I like spicy things, and it's truly tough for me to eat. So I imagine that if I'm having a tough time, that 95% of the people that eat it don't enjoy it. But I think it's just part of going there. And that if you get there and you don't order the shrimp cocktail, they kind of just look at you weird, and they kind of just shame you a little bit. And we were with a group of five, and one of us didn't get it, and they brought
it's
even
the
brought
only
the
app
sauce.
On the menu.
Yeah, no, it's just something you. I think it's a food bucket list thing that if you're in Indianapolis, you have to go there. And I've done it twice now, and I don't think I enjoyed it as much the second time as I did the first time. The shrimp cocktail, everything else is fantastic.
And what steak did you go with?
Indianapolis is a great city. I mean, it's
it
a great city
thing.
For
it's a little cold.
Yeah, well, it was awful, but the shrimp cocktail was fantastic. But the steak, I got the strip, New York strip, and that was the solid play. And by then, they try to offer you dessert, and you can barely walk at that.
It was fun watching, though, looking around the room, watching people like who hadn't had the shrimp cocktail yet get it, and just like, you know, staring at them, watching to see their reactions, because you see people like,
oh. Everyone pretends to be tough, but you know, it truly, like, that's the only way I can describe it, is it's lighting your sinuses on fire. If you have a cold,
it comes from like
the
back
great.
Of your head. It's like you almost feel it from the back of your head, and that just like overwhelms you. It's not, like I said, it's not like a habanero hot. It's not a pepper hot. It's just a, it's like a sensation. It has a physical impact on your being.
And it's an underrated thing, because the shrimp is delicious too. If you take off the sauce, the shrimp is very good on its own.
It's still hot, even if my buddy Andy Sims was scraping the sauce off and still complaining about how hot it was. And I was trying to eat like with gobs of it, just because it goes away. That's the thing. It's not like it's a long lasting thing, but I could see how if you didn't have a strong stomach, it could make you physically ill.
Yeah,
they said it has, and I asked the waitress. I said, "Is anybody like actually like thrown up from this or anything?" And it's happened.
Only the strong survive at St. Omo's.
Apparently, that is the case. Andrew Gribble, again, follow him on Twitter at Andrew_Gribble. And then one update: we got a nice note from at @PAngeloCLE said Alex Smith was a good comparison. Former number one overall pick traded. He was traded, as you recall, from the Niners to the Chiefs for a second round pick at that time. So that's a comparison there.
And he'd been healthy.
And he'd taken the team to an NFC Championship game.
So that. I could see that it being a kind of a direct comparison, but I think clearly Bradford comes with a little bit more question marks than maybe Alex Smith at that point.
So why not? Let's trade him a third. Here we go. All right, we'll be back. We'll hear from Pete Prisco. Says six quarters and you want to give up on Johnny Manziel? That's ridiculous. Also had his thoughts on the Browns offseason. That's coming up when we return here on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. Actually, we'll get to Pete later in the show. When we come back, let's hear from Nick Wagner. We wanted to talk about Sam Bradford. Why not get right into it with our guy from ESPN.com, the Rams reporter. Nick Wagner will be with us, and then we'll have Prisco on the backside wrapping up the show here on ESPN 850 WKNR. When the rest of-